Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I am super excited about my guest today. It's Mark Normand. I am a huge fan of his comedy. I've gotten to know him really well over the past couple of years because he's been touring with Bert for a while. And I absolutely adore him as a human being. And he's so funny. He has a new special out on Netflix called Soup to Nuts. I've watched it twice. It's hysterical. There are so many jokes. I think I laughed every single minute. I think I was tired by the end of it. I laughed so much. So please check it out if you haven't already. Soup to Nuts on Netflix. Mark and I talked about comedy. We talked about living in New York. We talked about getting mugged. We talked about getting married. He's not even been married a year yet, so I want to talk about that. Talked about him growing up in New Orleans, about his nanny growing up, which is an interesting story in and of itself. So I enjoyed this so much. Thank you, Mark, for coming in. And I hope you enjoy it, too, this episode of Wife of the Party with Mark Normand. Watch his special, Soup to Nuts, on Netflix.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night. I roller skated to your door at daylight. It almost seems like you're avoiding me. I'm okay alone, but you got something I need. Well, I got a brand new pair of roller skates.
You got a brand new key.
I think that we should together and try them on to see.
You're married a year?
Not yet. November will be a year.
November.
When do we start?
We started.
Oh, we did. Oh,
we did.
Sorry.
How do you like being married?
I like it because it just, you don't have to worry about it. Because I'm a big insecure queef. You know, I'm like, does she like me? I still, if I don't get a text back, I'm like, oh, she hates, the divorce papers are coming. Here we go. I'm such a nervous Nelly that a marriage just kind of goes, all right, well, the papers are signed. I can stop worrying about her not liking me.
She's awesome.
Good egg, lucky guy.
For real. She's super grounded.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. You know, you don't want one of those wives who's like always hungry or cold or tired. Those are the big lady three. I'm tired. And you have to go into your friends at the party and go, she wants to go. And they're like, you know, you stay. I'm like, I gotta go.
Right?
I never wanted to be that boyfriend or husband.
Yeah. Well, I think to be married to a comic, you have to be like almost in some ways like an air fern. Right? Always there. Don't need a lot.
Right.
But
low maintenance.
Yeah, low maintenance. Just kind of, and easygoing and laid back and understanding.
Right. Patient, not humble, not much of an ego.
Yep.
You are the archetype.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, you have the hardest of all the jobs of all the wives. You have the hardest one.
I don't know about that.
It's you and like Greg Giraldo's wife.
Oh,
you
God.
Know?
Well, I think mine's a little less hard than that.
Well, she got out easy. You're still going.
Sheesh.
No, I'm joking. But
it's
pretty
easy to be married to someone who is like inspiringly funny.
Yeah.
Like Bert really inspires me. He's really, I'm in awe of him sometimes.
Oh, we all are.
You know how he writes
mm-hmm.
and where he comes up with what he talks about. It just, because obviously a lot of what he talks about, I lived in some degree, and to go, wow, that, I didn't see that like that at all, but you're right. That's exactly what happened. But I would never have thought, oh yeah, people want to hear this or this would be funny.
Exactly. It was shows his experience when we were in, I think, Oklahoma City on the Fully Loaded. One of the daughters got hit by a car.
Yes.
On a bike.
Yes.
Or hit a car or whatever. And he just talked about it in an arena.
Uh-huh.
And it was killing. And it happened like the day before.
That was crazy, right?
Yeah, it was incredible. That's like real experience of being a comic.
It's really cool to watch. The whole ride with Bert's been really cool to watch.
Yeah.
I was not in the world of comedy. I had no interest in... I'm not one of those girls that dated a bunch of comics or...
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't like that.
A chuckle fucker.
No, not a chuckle fucker. That's a funny term, though. That's really funny. No, I just kind of... We met bowling.
No way.
Yeah, we met bowling. Yeah, we had some friends that were all couples. Got bowling night with all their single friends. Mm-hmm. So there were like couples versus singles. And yeah. He and I were on the singles team.
Wow.
And I asked him out. And I was like, oh, comic? I'm not marrying a comic.
Yeah.
Like, we'll date for a little bit and then we'll be friends forever.
Sure.
I'm definitely not marrying a comic. I mean, I'll be broke the rest of my life. This is going to, he'll never be home. Forget it. And then.
And when you see a young Bert, you're not like, he's going to be a zillionaire.
No.
This guy's never going to make it.
No.
He's fun. He's cute. But he ain't. This guy's not going to be. Owning a couple houses in Hollywood?
I don't know. I did kind of feel like not like that, but I did kind of go, there's something really special about him. Like his mm-hmm. energy is infectious.
That's true.
And his positivity is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so contagious. And that is what you want to be around. He's so magnetic in that way.
He's very magnetic. We went to Europe and I'm hungover all the time with him. And I want to just lay in bed and cry and eat and then, you know, jerk off. But he's like, come on, we're hitting the elliptical. And he's got a Bud Light on the elliptical, shirtless, at a hotel. And I'm like, this guy's an animal. He's older than me. And he just killed me. We went skiing. You know, one day he'll be like, I'll snowboard today. And then he's better than us at snowboarding. Then he goes back to skiing. And it's pretty impressive.
It's crazy. It's like being married to a party.
Yeah. Yeah. But what about the downside? There's got to be some downside.
The downside is he is very self-focused.
Sure,
he's not selfish.
Right.
But he's very self-focused. So sometimes you'll be like, hey, how about asking about my day?
Yeah.
And then in the middle of me saying my day, he'll go, so I'll sing about this joke. And I'm like, motherfucker, I just asked you to ask me about my day because I'm helping you help yourself.
Right, right.
In my relationship with you. So he's not great at that. And he's also, you know, I'm sure you know, has all this anxiety and OCD.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no OCD or anxiety.
Really?
No.
That's so cool to hear. Because that's all everybody, they make their whole personality. So it's nice to see someone like, I got none of that shit.
I have regular anxiety. I get anxious about things, but I don't have anxiety. So it took a long time for me to figure out how to deal with his anxiety for myself.
Mm.
Right? Because when someone's in high anxiety, all the surrounding people can do is deal with that anxiety.
Right.
So
you
can't be like, well, this also sucks for me because you don't exist in that world at all.
Yeah.
So it took me a long time to figure out I still exist for me. And I can exist for him in about 20 minutes, but I can't do it right now.
Yeah.
So a lot of like, you just got to hold yourself together and know that you'll get what you need a little later. And that's not for everybody. It's a really hard skill. It kind of sucks.
Yeah.
In the moment.
And I think everybody's very me, 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 especially out here in LA and show business. So to be the I'll step back, that's rare. Especially now. I think everybody's narcissism is kicked up quite a bit.
I think so. It's hard to do sometimes to just kind of wait and mm-hmm. hold your feelings and then go, so remember when you were having that panic attack? Here's what was going on for me.
Yeah.
And just say it at a time when he can hear it.
Right.
That's a skill set.
I know a guy, he has his mom would adopt foster kids. Mm-hmm. So he always had extra kids in the house. And a lot of them had like AIDS or were poor or drug addicted parents. So he was like, I can't complain. This kid's got AIDS.
Right.
What the hell am I going to say? Oh, I got a tummy ache or I want a video game. He's got AIDS.
Right.
And that's kind of like Bert. Bert's got AIDS.
Yeah.
And you got to hang tight.
I just have post-nasal drip.
Yeah.
That's all I got going on.
Well, have you heard that thing about marriage? Now that I'm married, I listen to all this self-help horse shit. But it's pretty good about how there's the 50-50 syndrome, which is... If you're at 80% and he's at a 20, like he's got mono or he's sick or he's busy, you got to use some of your 80 and you give him 60 or no, you give him 40 and now he's up to 50.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you're down in the dumps, he's got to come in and give you some of his to get you both back at 50.
That paradigm does not exist at my house. That paradigm is Bert's always got always needs more of my 80.
Right.
That doesn't exist. I don't know. I often wonder, I never hope this, but I often wonder if I got like really sick, what would happen?
Oh,
you know
God.
What I mean? Like he would be great, I'm sure. Like I had COVID back in earlier COVID where you had to be in a room by yourself. And he did pretty good. He left me alone, which is what you're supposed to do. But I expected him to be like, hey, babe, where are the scissors? And you're like, dude, you've lived in this house for 2 years. You don't know what the scissors are? Come on.
Yeah, right.
But he didn't. He didn't really take care of me.
Mm.
He just handled himself without me, which is not the same.
Not
the same.
Yeah, what the hell? But he does have he can pay for stuff.
He can pay for stuff. He can.
So he can pay a nurse to come in and watch you, but he's not going
to
do it.
I don't know if he'd be good at it. We'll see. We'll have to. Hopefully, we won't ever find out.
What about with the childbirth stuff? Crying baby? Was he in there? With the shirt off, swaddling and swooning?
That took a minute. I remember in the hospital. So I had Georgia and I had a really rough delivery, really bad.
Mm.
Like I had a spinal, pierced the epidermis of my spinal cord. Mm. So my spinal fluid leaked. When that happens, you have less fluid in your head. So your brain is literally like banging around in your skull.
Yeah.
And it's really excruciatingly painful to even just sit upright.
Mm-hmm.
So Georgia's in the hospital crying. We're in the hospital and Bert goes, hey, are you going to get that? And I'm like, motherfucker, I can't even sit up.
Wow.
No, I think you're the one getting that. Oh, I'll get that. And I think in some ways it was good because right from the first day he had to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yeah. And then until I was 4 and Georgia was 6, I worked full time.
Wow.
So when he was not on the road, we couldn't really afford a nanny.
Yeah.
So
he
did it until he went, like if he was leaving on Thursday, we had a nanny for Thursday, Friday, and then I had Saturday, Sunday off. And then he was like, got him up, got him to preschool, did the grocery shopping, picked him up after school, made dinner, did bath, did everything.
Okay. So he can do it.
He can do it.
He just has to be pushed.
Yeah.
Wow.
He has to be the only option.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's it. It's kind of like my brother was the biggest slob of all time. And then he moved into his own apartment. And I went over there once and it was spotless because he never had to clean it. He figured out my mom will do it if I don't.
Yeah.
But now that he had to do it, he had to do it.
He had to do it. You grew up in New Orleans, huh?
Oh, yeah.
What was that like? Not that you have any point of reference for growing up anywhere else, but New Orleans is a pretty specific city.
It was weird. And my neighborhood was weird. So my vision of New Orleans is very skewed, I think.
Why was your neighborhood weird?
Well, we were the white family in the poor black neighborhood, and we lived in a giant house, and everybody thought we were rich, and then we got broken into a lot, but we weren't rich, so then they were disappointed. There was a lot of that.
Did they leave a comment card or something? How'd you know they were disappointed?
Well, because there'd be a lot of scrounging, but nothing was gone.
Because
they were just looking for money or jewelry or something. We didn't have any. So... you'd lose a TV or a VCR here and there, but you could tell there was a lot of like probably guys in ski masks like, fuck, there's nothing here, you know?
Waste of time,
but still scary as a little kid when I'm literally upstairs in my bedroom and I could hear people downstairs scurrying and you're like, ugh, are they going to come up here? Are they going to kill me? Are they going to kill my parents? So I think that's why I'm so nutty and
nervous, skittish
and I can't sleep and our alarm would go off. We had a big alarm, woo, 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 and the alarm people would call you, and the code was Batman, which meant, like, we're safe.
Uh-huh.
But if you didn't say Batman, the cops would come.
Right. Did the cops come?
Cops came a few times.
Mm-hmm.
One time, the cops slept at our house.
No.
Or not slept, but, like, staked out overnight, because we kept getting robbed. We got robbed, like, 3 times in 2 weeks
or
something. So the cops knew us, and they're like, we're going to send 2 guys to sit in your living room or your kitchen and wait for these guys, just in case they come, we'll just get them. And as a kid, I was 7 years old, like, this is so cool. There's cops downstairs. I pictured myself running downstairs and the guys are in handcuffs, you know. Turns out I came downstairs at 8 a.m. The cops left at 7. Everything was eaten.
Oh, my God.
They ate every Pop-Tart, all the cereal. They ate eggs. We got robbed again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Or raped, one of the two, right?
Yeah, they raped the kitchen.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's
they got
super
bored.
Scary.
I know, but yeah, it was a weird time. Then when I was like 14 or 15, we moved to a better neighborhood. It was too much.
Sounds like a lot.
It was a lot. It was a lot. And just like the tension in the neighborhood, like I was a skateboard kid and that was very white mm-hmm. back then. And there was a lot of like, get out of here with that skateboard, or they would throw it over a fence or whatever it was. So it was, you know, we always talk about racism, but it's just different. It's like whoever's different, you know, if it was all white and it was a black kid, that he would be messed with. And if you're the only white kid, you'll get messed with. It's just who's the odd man out.
Yeah, totally. It's a different culture too, even though different races have different cultures.
Sure.
You know, so I know, I remember my dad saying to me once, I've talked about this before, but one of my friends from high school who was black died in a car accident and I wanted to go to his funeral. And my dad said, don't do that. That's really rude because you're imposing yourself on their culture. Now you're going to make them take care of you. You're going to be the only white girl at this all black funeral.
Interesting.
Don't do that. That's really rude. And I was like, what? And he was like, well, unless the family like said, hey, will you come?
Yeah.
Don't just show up because, you know, in the South, you just show up, somebody dies. You don't have to be like, hey, will you come to the funeral? They just, in a town of 1,600 people.
Right.
You just show up. And I was like, well, I would never have thought of it like that.
I wouldn't have either, but he might be right. He might
but
have
But he might have been right. And my dad wasn't like, don't go to a black guy's funeral. He was, it was sincerely like, don't do that because then they're going to be worried about you.
Yeah.
And they need to be worried about themselves and their family and what they're going through. So don't impose yourself like that.
Smart dad.
I guess. I mean, maybe he's a covert racist and that was his workaround, but I don't think so.
Pretty smart workaround. Well, I went to a black church a couple times because I'd sleep at a friend's house and then we'd have to go to church in the morning, which was weird because I didn't go to church. So I went to church with a lot of friends, but the black church was wild.
Yeah.
Just the singing and the dance, the getting up and boy, you feel out of place. I'm like clapping off rhythm, you know, it was really bad, but it was cool to see.
How do you think growing up like that informed your comedy or did it?
Well, in New Orleans, people are funny. It's like a funny town. It's almost like Boston, where just like, or New York, where everyone's kind of funny. So comedy doesn't really live there. Like comedy clubs don't last in New Orleans.
Because everybody's funny.
Everybody's funny. And you want to go see music. You want to get drunk. You don't want to listen to a guy be like, so cereal's weird, huh? You know, what's the deal with lamps or whatever joke you're doing? So they don't want to sit and listen to that. They got stuff to do. They want to party. They want to dance. They want to shuck and jive. So, and then we're all funny. We were all funny. A lot of laughing as a kid. A lot of ball busting. We made a lot of videos, like comedy sketches. So that really helped me. And comedy was huge. We all watched SNL. We watched, you know, Chris Farley and, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah. And my dad was a huge joke nut. So he would send me Yogi Berra jokes. Like
no way.
And I feel like that was a big part.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I met your dad.
Yeah.
I talked to your dad and your mom for a long time. He's a joke nut. I would not have guessed that.
Well, a lot of dad and sons bond on sports. We didn't really like sports, but jokes we both liked. So we kind of honed in on
that.
Yeah. Also, jokes were a bigger thing when I was younger. Like you see a guy and he goes, got any good jokes? Know any good jokes? Like you got a Michael Jackson joke or Christopher Reeves would fall off a horse and he had a joke about that. Like people just tell you jokes because you didn't have a phone to stare at. So guys would sit around and tell, oh, you know, you heard this one? You ever heard the one? Two Jews walk into a bar or whatever. Also in the back of my toilet, we had a big joke book, like 1,001 dirty jokes. You know, Playboy had jokes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Jokes were everywhere. And now I feel like they're not. And maybe that's why comedy is so popular.
That's a good point. You're right. Jokes. I had truly tasteless jokes.
Yes.
And you're right. People just told jokes all the time. I wonder if people were worried about getting canceled or if there's no original thought or we just don't sit around on the back porch and shoot the shit enough like we did in the past.
I think that's what it is because you had to socialize. You were always with people.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're just looking at this, you know.
Scrolling. It's true.
So that's why probably podcasts are so popular because we're used to for thousands of years of evolving. We just told stories and hung out. And now we're like, oh, there's one awkward moment. Fuck that. I'll just go watch Netflix.
You're canceled.
Yeah. Or that. Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
It's all very silly because like I'll watch 30 Rock. Tina Fey is really funny. And she'll have a blackface joke. And we all laughed at it in 2009 or whenever it was. And now we're like, that's horrible. But you're like, so why'd we laugh at it then?
Right.
Have we all just gotten to be better people or are we all just scared?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or a gay joke or whatever it is.
Like, yeah.
I don't, it feels very phony.
It does feel very phony. It feels very shallow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the thing about what I find interesting, my trainer is African-American, mm-hmm. and he is from New Orleans, partly. He spent summers, actually, half hour from my hometown in Georgia
with
family, but he grew up in New Orleans and some in Texas. And I love going to work out with him because it's a completely different culture than anything I've ever been in.
It's fun.
His whole family's there. It's in his house. So his son works out with us. I see his mom. And the stuff that they talk about is not stuff that I would ever hear.
Right.
And the music that he listens to is not music that I would ever listen to. And I freaking love it.
Of course. It's good to mix it up.
Totally. And the stuff he talks about, oh my God. He taught me this term. It's called shallow with the pussy. Do you know what this means?
Mm-mm.
I was like,
is that a shallow vagina?
That's what I said.
Yeah.
That's what I said. He said, no, it's for somebody who is a slut.
Oh, shallow with the pussy.
Yeah.
I like that.
I was like, I'm going to totally use that term now. But it's something in their culture, in the African-American culture that he is in, that I would never even know. And I
right.
come home and I go, wait till you hear what I heard today
yeah.
from Mikhail. This is so awesome.
Wow.
And I don't know why. I mean, I don't use that term, but I don't really talk about sluts ever at 53. But it's so funny that we just can't appreciate other, you know, people in a way that is with levity.
Yeah.
And appreciation.
Exactly.
And poking fun is part of appreciation and levity.
Well, I think a couple things happened. I think outrage got really popular. I think everyone has fucked up thoughts. I don't care who you are, Mother Teresa, whatever, activist. We all have fucked up thoughts. We all see a certain race or a certain group and make a judgment call in our head, whether it's right or wrong. And I think some people have those thoughts, so they feel bad about it and they have to overcompensate by yelling at you when you say shallow with the pussy.
Right.
You know? And you can get points, you know, you get clicks for doing it. So I think it's very enticing for people mm-hmm. to call you out for being a bad person. But I think we're all kind of shitty at the end of the day. We're all selfish.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Your comedy, I mean, I just watched your special. I've seen your stand-up so much, but were you worried about any of it?
I was, yeah, because I'm a sensitive douche, you know? So people are like, hey, you're a racist. And you're like, what? How'd we get here? I just made a joke, you know? If I was a real racist, I wouldn't joke about race.
Totally.
Because I would just be serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I'm worried people won't understand it's a joke and just be like, you're a piece of shit, but... Nothing really yet, because I think if you're going to do darker topics, you got to have a big punchline.
Uh-huh.
That's the way to get out of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've always said to Bert. I never mind what he says about me as long as it's funny.
Yeah.
I can't be mean.
Exactly.
It has to be funny, and I can't be made to look like an idiot or an asshole.
Sure.
As long as it's really funny. And I love your special. It's so funny.
Oh, thanks. Jeez, that means a lot.
I laugh like every single minute, not joking.
Oh, I
every
try to
minute.
Pump it out because I don't want people to get bored. I have a real fear of people getting bored.
No chance.
All right.
There's no chance.
Thank you.
I watched it a long time ago, and then I watched it again last week. I was like, it's like being on a train. There's just like the express train where it just never stops. Just boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Boom, boom,
thanks.
It's
yeah.
Awesome.
I appreciate it. I worked hard on it. So that means a lot.
So why did you become a comic? What happened that you, like, what were you doing before? Is this something and you were like, I'm going to be a comedian?
Well, I always loved comedy. I just never thought I could do it. You know, you see Steve Martin or Seinfeld or Richard Pryor and you're like, that's like being an astronaut. How do you get there? How do you get on TV? But I had zero going on. I was a loser. I was a drunk. I lived in a house with five guys. We'd play beer pong and poker in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Okay.
And we just had big parties and had a hot tub and tried to get a hook up with girls and get drunk.
How old were you?
Yeah, it was college. I was 21, 22.
You were doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
I thought you were like, oh, I was 29. And
no, but you know, my parents were always like, what are you going to do with your life? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your major? What are you into? And I said, I'll be a filmmaker. So I took a summer off of Baton Rouge. I went to New York Film Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of was like, yeah, this is fun, but it was too much collaborating. I want to just make it, move on. You mm-hmm. know, you have to write it, you have to light it, you have to edit it. It was so much. And I started doing sets at night. I started doing stand-up at night. And I was like, wait, this is it. Mm. This is way better. And then I just finished film school, never thought about it again. And I just kept doing stand-up, moved back to New Orleans after college. And phone book, comedy clubs, open mic. We drive to Texas. We drive to Florida. We drive to Alabama, me and the other comedians. And I was like, this is it. And I moved to New York. And I had nothing. I had so little going on that I had nothing to lose.
Right.
You know, which is kind of it's a desperate, sad time, but also freeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved to New York. I got mugged three times in a year. Mm. I had no money. I got bed bugs.
Oh,
the city tries to like spit you out.
It
you know,
does.
It's a really real shithole. Mm. And, but you know, kept going.
That's awesome.
I was a janitor. I moved furniture. I worked on a construction site. I worked in a cubicle. I did it all.
Wow.
Yeah. And then here we are.
And that's really cool.
Hey, thanks.
I think it's good for people to hear how people get to where they are.
Yeah,
you know,
I love that.
What's your path? Because I did something similar in that I moved to New York because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I went to an acting school there.
Oh,
for
really?
Meisner acting. And
wow.
While I was acting, figured out I'd rather write.
Yeah.
And pivoted into writing. It took me a few years of kind of doing both, but then at a certain point I was like, I don't want to be an actor. I actually don't. Every time I go to an audition, I go, she'd be awesome for this part.
Yeah.
I don't need to even read. Never mind. I'm just going to go home. I don't want to do this. I'm just going to keep writing.
You should cast.
But no, I was just like, I just, not me.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
not me. But yeah, New York, I was the same. I got mugged twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, let's hear it. What happened?
Fucking one time I was going up the stairs in the subway, 34th Street. Now, I lived there 93
yeah.
to 97. So that's before Disney bought 42nd Street.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when all of 42nd Street was peep shows.
Okay.
It was all XXX rated movie theaters.
Oh, yeah.
And peep show and prostitution. It was
yes.
rough.
Okay.
When I lived there. So Disney bought it like right before I left.
Ah.
So it just started cleaning up when I moved to L.A.
Is this Giuliani time?
No.
Pre-Giuliani.
Yeah, I think
okay.
so. It was long time ago. It mm-hmm. was not pretty.
Was it kind of fun and gritty? Because it's coming
from
Georgia.
It was very gritty. Like, I remember going to get Indian food. I'm from rural Georgia. I'd never had Chinese food.
Mm.
I'd never had Indian food. Mexican food was like a quesadilla.
Right.
That was it. So, you know, in New York, you can eat anything.
Yeah.
So some friend, one of my jobs, I had many jobs in New York. One of my jobs, our office, I worked in an office like as a receptionist, we're going to get Indian food in Alphabet City. And I walked over, like stepped over a human being I was pretty sure was dead. Just in the street.
Yeah.
It was super all heroin in those
yes.
days. It was bad over
wow.
there. But that's where the Indian food was. So you just walk over a dead person, go get Indian food. You come out and you go, yep, cheat over that guy. I just stepped over him. That was pretty bad.
Whoa.
New York was rough then. And
so what
Hell's
about the
Kitchen
mugging?
Was rough. So the mugging, I was leaving work. I waited tables at the Paramount Hotel in Times Square, and mm-hmm. I was going in the subway. I was going up the stairs, and this guy was going down the stairs, and he grabbed me in the pussy.
Oh, no. He Donald Trumped you.
He totally did.
Whoa.
And I beat the shit out of him.
Really?
I did. I grabbed him by the arm and started hitting him with my other arm and wrenched his arm until I got him completely on the ground and beat him up.
No
way. And
then
got on the subway and left. So that's not really a mugging. I guess it's more of an assault.
That's incredible. You won.
I did. And then the second time, I was still working at that hotel, work breakfast. So I had to leave my apartment. I was up 80th in Amsterdam. I had to leave my apartment at like 5 to get on the bus to go down to 42nd Street to work. And I started walking to the bus station and this guy was sitting on a stoop and I went, he's going to fucking mug me.
No way.
And as soon as I walked past him, he got up and started following me. And I went, all right, I'm fixing to get mugged. Here we go. So he came up behind me and he had a gun.
Whoa.
And he said, give me your money. I want all your money. And
Hasidic guy?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. No, he was Hispanic.
Okay.
But not to profile, yeah. But he was. And I had $17 because, you know, when you're in New York, you're so broke.
Sure.
And I took it out of my purse. And I went, you want my fucking money? I'll give you my money. You know what I do for my money? I work for my money. You know what you do for your money? You rip people off. You're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And I threw the money at him. And I walked to the corner, 2 blocks up to 82nd.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway is the police station. Went in the police department. When I just got mugged on 80th. Got in a cop car. Went right back around the block and had him arrested.
No way.
Yep.
Wow.
And I was like, fuck you. Give me my $17 back.
Hell yeah. I mean, you're a hero. You beat up one guy and then you got the other guy arrested.
I got the other guy arrested.
Hell yeah.
I don't remember if they gave me my money back, but I definitely got him arrested. I was like, fuck you. I work so hard to just live in this city, little tiny, weighed 100 pounds, little tiny little white girl.
Right.
Come on.
Hell, you brought that southern charm up there and kick some ass.
I was also an angry person, I think, at that point in my life. Well, so I was like, they were messing with me.
The city does that to you. It brings
it
the
does,
evil out
right?
of you. Yeah, I got robbed. Forget about the mugging. I came home one day. My door was wide open.
Oh my
and
God.
There was a, I opened the door a little more and a chair fell over. I don't know what that means. I think he was like, I'll block the door with a chair. But my door was wide open. I was like, oh no, I got robbed. I go in my apartment. Everything's there. Laptop's there. TV's there. Computer's there. I'm like, huh. But I had one drawer. I had one drawer I kept all my valuables in. And he opened that one drawer, took everything. I had $6,000 in cash in there from just doing comedy sets. I'd throw the money in, you know, 20 here, 40 there. And I had like a couple of bags of weed in there. I had a brass knuckle, you know, some cool. I had a Playboy. You know, it was like my fun guy drawer. Took everything.
Oh, man.
And they caught the guy, but I never got the money back.
How did he get in?
He came in through the window. Fire escape. Yeah, like Spider-Man.
Wow.
Yeah, and he walked over my window was next to my bed, so he had to walk over my bed. You see the footprints. It's very violating.
It is.
You know, and then that drawer was wide open and just empty.
Oh.
He got everything out of there, and they got one fingerprint off the guy, and they caught him.
That's crazy.
Crazy. But you can't claim cash. I can't be like, oh, he took, because I could just say any number.
$50,000.
Exactly. So I never got it back.
What a bummer.
I know.
What about the mugging?
Well, they're pretty wild. One, I was a big booze bag. A couple of them were my fault. One, I was in Hell's Kitchen, and I was so drunk, I left this bar, and I just said, let me sit down in this little doorway, kind of in an apartment building, a little alcove, 3 steps down. Let me just take a little nap. I was so hammered.
Oh, my God.
I woke up to like 4 or 5 guys going through my pockets. And I went, and they go, one of the guys goes, he's getting up. Hit me. And I went out again.
Oh, my God.
So I woke up. My joke book was gone. My money was gone. My phone, my keys, my pen. Everything was gone.
Oh, geez.
He's like, you need to take my pen. But all right. Now some guy's doing my act. but yeah. So by the way, when you have no wallet or money or anything, getting back home is tough because you can't, you have your Metro cards gone. Now you can't buy a Metro card. So I just had to jump the turnstiles, go home, beg my buddy for, you know, $20. And I had to buy everything. It was brutal.
What a mess.
Yeah, it was a mess. The craziest one is I was living way out in Crown Heights, which is like deep Brooklyn. And I went a couple stops past my stop because I fell asleep on the train drunk. And I get out and I said, I'll just walk it. It's like 5 stops. It'll probably be like a half hour walk. I can do it. 4 in the morning, I see a couple of thugs on the corner shooting dice, like out of a movie, drinking 40s, you know, throwing money around and being loud. And I said, let me cross the street. And I walked across the street away from them, and an older guy with a white beard, older black guy, big guy, he goes, I had an iPod on. That's what the year it was, the iPod.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, give me that fucking radio. And I was so drunk, I go, it's not a radio, because it was an MP3 player. So I was a real nerd. And he goes, all right, that's it. And he just starts yanking at the cord. And I think he was on something too. And I'm yanking it back. And then he just picks me up like in a movie, lifts me off my feet, and starts slamming me against this. You know when the business closed, the metal gate?
Uh-huh.
He's slamming me against it. It's like going pow, pow. It's so loud, the metallic pow. And I'm kicking him. I'm punching. My feet are dangling. And I'm punching this guy. I'm freaking out. I don't know. I think I'm going to die. Before I know it, those guys, those thugs who I judged and profiled, they run over, pull the guy off me, start beating the shit out of him. I mean, kicking him in the face. He's on the ground. They're just wailing on him. I grab my iPod and I run home.
Oh, my God.
I said, thank you. I didn't know. I was so scatterbrained. I was like, thank you. And I ran out of there.
How scary.
Scary. I talked to a cop later. He said, those guys were probably drug dealers. They can't have a white kid getting killed in the neighborhood. That's going to ruin their whole business.
Oh.
And there you go.
How crazy.
Crazy. And that was like, I was like in New York a week, 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
I know.
That's great. Oh, thank you.
Oh, look at that.
It does. Is it
very nice?
You guys are doing really well. Keep it up.
I didn't know you were listening.
Are you watching?
That's embarrassing.
That's embarrassing.
Wow. I thought we were in a little bubble here, a safe space.
We are in a bubble.
Turns out they're probably mocking us on TV.
No.
All right.
They'll mock us later when we let it release it. That's so crazy, huh?
Yeah. New York, man. But people always say, oh, why didn't you quit? You should have quit. I'm like, what else am I going to do?
I'll exactly.
Keep going.
You know, there's a part of you, I think, when you live in New York like that, you will not let it break you.
Yeah.
Like, I was at that point, I was like, fuck the city, fuck everybody. You will not break me.
Yeah.
I will leave of my own volition.
Right.
You're not running me out of here.
Well, I don't know. I had a lot of friends move.
Yeah. Well, I moved, obviously.
Oh, okay.
But I moved because I was like, oh, well, I grew up in Georgia, and I grew up for a lot of it in rural Georgia on a mostly on a farm or in a log cabin on like 20 acres of land.
Yeah.
And the city, like, I not having green was starting to make me depressed.
Right.
I was getting really down.
Oh, interesting.
And I found myself flying home a lot. And literally, I would go home and drive to my dad's house and sit in the pasture.
Really?
And sit in the pasture at the river and just sit there.
Whoa.
And I thought to myself, I might actually, like, my psyche might need a little more nature.
Yeah.
And I never really found any great friends. You know, if I'd had, like, a communal connection that I felt was great there.
That's tough.
I didn't. I had friends, mm-hmm. but I didn't feel, like, super, like, these are my people.
Yeah, you need that core group. That's what comedians were great. You find these other comedians, and we really hung out, stuck together. But without that, New York is so lonely.
It's so lonely. And I did it for 4 years.
Wow, that's pretty good.
It's a long time. And so after that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to move to LA. I kept my apartment there. I sublet it. I was like, I'm gonna spend 6 months and I'm going to reevaluate.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, like the minute I got here, I started making friends.
There you go.
Christine Pierce downstairs
yeah.
is one of the first friends I made here. And she's still my friend.
See.
So I was like, okay, well then end the green. And I was, you know, I lived at the foot of a canyon here and would hike all the time. And
yep.
I was like, okay, this is my deal. Mm-hmm. I never would have thought I would have been an LA person.
Yeah.
Ever. I never would have. Coming from Georgia, people don't usually go from Georgia to LA.
Right.
New York made more sense.
Sure.
You know,
East Coast.
Totally. But once I got here and life started just kind of falling into place, then you go, well, then this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, LA, you hate to admit it. It's got all the stereotypes. Everybody's fake. The hobos, Skid Row. But when I come here, I did Whitney's podcast. Have you seen Whitney's house?
It's amazing.
It's insane. She's got acres and acres and these fucking hammocks out there. Every seat is levitating because they're all on ropes.
Right.
And you can just sit and rock. And she's got a fire pit. And I got a cocktail and the big dog. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And then you go to New York, it's just, man, some guy throws jizz on you. There's a pigeon gnawing at your head, a rat's on your foot. It's brutal. So LA, all I hear on the news is like the stabbings and the fentanyl and the fires. But you come here and you're like, this is incredible.
It's very livable.
Yeah.
LA. And the LA has so many different pockets. Like you could live in downtown LA and feel not the same as New York.
Sure.
But some similar. There's some similar parts. It's true. Similar. But like where we live, is just super family. I mean, Bert, when we were first married, we were living in Hollywood, and we couldn't afford a house anywhere except where we bought a house, which was over in the Valley. And he kept going, "I'm not moving to the Valley. Losers live in the Valley. There's no way." Literally, we'd been here like 6 months, and he was like, "I can't believe it took us this long to get here. Like, you can park.
Yeah.
No one's honking at you.
I know.
No one's like in a mad rush for nothing.
Exactly.
People are just like regularly just driving over here.
It's pretty nice.
And you go, oh, that's better. If we want to go to Hollywood, it's just 20 minutes and we're there.
I know.
It's not that hard.
I was at Bobby Lee's apartment the other day, or house, and it's right on the hills. And it's
beautiful up there.
Beautiful. That view. It's like nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
You think you'd ever not live in New York?
I know. Well, see, I'm a city kid through and through. So I love the city. Like the green thing, I have zero green thing.
Yeah.
It's the same with like dick. I don't need dick, you know? some guys are like, I like a little dick. I don't want any dick. And I feel the same about green. I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I go to Central Park and I get it.
Yeah.
But
about May?
She grew up. See, she's the opposite. I grew up in the city. She grew up in the burbs of Cape Cod.
Oh.
Cape Cod's a seasonal town. In the winter, it's just dead and quiet. And then in the summer, you can go to the beach. But she likes the city because she hated the burbs. So we bond on that because I like the city because I grew up there. She likes the city because she hated her childhood house.
Right.
So we bond on that. And New York has that, I need that that pace or I panic. Because if I moved out to LA, I'd look like Bert. You know, I'd gain a bunch of weight. I'd drink more. I would be in the hot tub all day because it's so chill here.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have anything. I wouldn't get anything done.
Right.
Smoke some weed. Look at the sun, you know, maybe hike once a month. But other than that, I would just never do anything.
You seem the energy of someone who would live in a city.
Yeah, I got to have that treadmill on.
You do. You seem that way. And aren't you neighbors with Matthew Broussard? Aren't you neighbors?
We're moving to Brooklyn, and we're going to move near him. So we will be neighbors.
Don't you have cats that are friends or something?
Yeah, we have a big cat, and they have a little cat, and he watches ours when he's out of town, and I watch, or, you know. When he's out of town, I watch his. He watches mine when I'm out of town.
That's so funny.
It's nice. It's a little cat swap.
That's really
which
funny.
Sounds super gay now that I see it. There's two guys swapping cats.
Maybe you should call it a pussy swap.
Yeah. Shallow with the pussy.
There you go. A little bit better.
Yeah.
So drinking was a theme in a lot of the stories you told. I don't really see you drinking to that excess. You just don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I got too many bad nights. I woke up on the sidewalk once in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and I was like, you know, pebbles on my face. And I was like, I had a lot of those nights where you wake up, your wallet's just gone. Now you got to deal with that and be hungover. Too much of that. And I got into a beat up once, fist fight. My mom, I was in New Orleans. I got beat up at Mardi Gras parade because I was too drunk. I was like peeing on someone's lawn.
Oh, my God.
And I had a giant whopping egg on my face, big black egg. And my mom was like, "Hey, you're in town. Let's get lunch." And I was like, "I can't. I'm sick," because I couldn't face my mom with that black eye.
Right.
So it just got too bad. And then business got a little better. And so I was like, if I keep drinking, I'll lose this.
Right.
And I didn't want to lose the momentum. And like the fact that Bert could do it he's like almost monetized it.
Well, he's sort of, but he's not really like what you're describing. Mm. Like he's never gotten beaten up because he's
That's
been
true.
Drunk. He doesn't like wake up and his wallet's gone.
Yeah, he's good at it.
He doesn't like, there's whatever it is that the volume of alcohol that he drinks doesn't seem to affect him.
That's true.
Like the chemistry of it doesn't really work out.
It's really impressive.
It's really impressive because he doesn't change his personality.
No, he's a happy drunk.
He's the same basic person unless you upset him. And then he has a harder time in an argument when he's drinking, hearing anything other than what's going on for himself. Right. But yeah, that's not the same. I think because I've drank a lot when I was in college and I had similar experiences where I'd wake up and go, "Hey, how'd I get home?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, my window's open. Oh, wait, there's my purse in the yard.
Yeah, time travel.
Oh, wait, and and the car is in the parking lot with the door open.
Oh,
that's probably not great.
My asshole's bleeding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, not that.
Oh,
was
okay.
Not shallow with
Me
the
neither.
Pussy while drinking. But at the same time, after enough of those, you go, "What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Like, you need to this isn't good. You're going to get yourself really hurt one day.
Oh, 100%. I'm lucky to be alive. The drunk driving alone was wild.
Totally. I was a drunk driver. I got arrested for drunk driving.
Is that right?
I did.
I did not know that.
I did. I was 20.
Whoa. Got arrested jail time? For
drunk. I did not do jail time. It was my first offense. I paid a fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in jail with my uncle, who was also in jail for drunk driving.
Hey, that's
same time. It's a family affair.
A small town right there. Hey, uncle.
It's a small town. I was like, he called me Leanimus. And I was walking in with the female officer, and I hear, Leanimus? And there's only one person in my life that called me that. And I was like, oh, my God, it's my Uncle Terry. Hi, what are you doing in here? He's like, drunk driving. I'm like, me too.
That's great.
Hopefully never again. That's... Only once. And I was 20. So I figured my drinking shit out at like, actually about 21. Where wow. I went, well, I'm drinking a little too much for my health. I had health problems and stuff from it too.
But... Oh, really?
Yeah. So okay. I got it all figured out.
I'm jealous of that. That's good. You got it out early. Like Craig Fitzsimmons got sober at like 19 because he was such a bad drunk. And I'm like, man, how the hell would, I couldn't even imagine not drinking at 19.
Well, I'm not sober.
Yeah.
But I was sober for like 7 years because I was like, so many bad things are happening, like getting arrested and shit like that. And waking up with my, not knowing how I got home. And definitely blacking out a lot.
Yeah,
and
same.
Like enlarged liver, losing my hair. Like I was really drinking. It was bad.
That's wild.
But I went, I need to actually figure out why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
So I got into therapy to figure out why I was drinking. And then
good
when I figured
you.
Out why I was drinking, I was like, well, then drinking doesn't mean anything to me.
Right.
The drinking was about covering up pain and trauma. So if I just deal with the pain and the trauma in therapy, then I can just have a drink. And so, like, I don't have any problem with alcohol now. I drink, don't care. Get
good
drunk, don't get drunk, don't care.
That's the best way to do it. You got to the root of it. That's
I did.
The key.
Yeah, I got to the root of it. I mean, I'm still in therapy dealing with some of that stuff from time to time, but most of it's dealing with Bert. Now I'm like, I'm so mad at him and he can't hear me say this. So I got to tell somebody.
You got to tell somebody.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
But anyway, that's good that you straightened it out. And that's I like that reason that your business was going great. And you were like, you know what? Maybe I should.
Yeah. And the hangovers were horrific. You know, I'm 39 now. So once you hit 30, the hangovers really kick in. Then you start 35, start getting 2-day hangovers. And I couldn't, you know, the whole business, like talking, being on a podcast, being on stage. And you just were less, the quality went down when I was hungover. And I was like, I want the quality to go up. So
right.
I'll drink after the show. How about that? Or I'll drink one before the show. And that's really the key. Because I love drinking, so I don't want to abuse it.
Right.
You know, it's like kids.
Totally. Don't want to abuse them.
Yeah.
Shouldn't. Bad call.
Yes, yes.
You should not do that. So what do you just, I don't want this to sound shitty. I don't mean it shitty.
Lay it on me.
Do you just want to be a stand-up, or is there something else you want to do in entertainment?
This is every agent's nightmare. I just want to be a stand-up.
That's not a nightmare.
For
I think
them,
that's
it
amazing.
Is.
You know why I think that's amazing? Because I think it allows you to have a very focused, fulfilling, rich life.
Yeah.
And because my husband's aspirations are multifaceted.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I feel like, where's his rest? Where does he get to really like revel in what he's accomplished
right.
in this one lane? Because once that's accomplished, he's moved to another lane. He's got to go over in this lane. And sometimes I think that would be, I don't begrudge him any choices he makes. I think he's doing everything he should do for himself. But I often think how cool it would be to just have that be your lane.
Yeah. Well, he's like a drunk Kevin Hart, you know, where like Kevin Hart is a good, a funny stand up. And then he's got the movies. He's got a TV show. He's got a workout thing. He's got a podcast. Some people are just wired that way. And I just don't care. Like, people are like, what's your sitcom? You grew up in New Orleans. You had a transgender nanny and all this. Like, this is, and I'm just like, ah.
Wait a minute. You had a transgender nanny?
Well, transvestite.
You did?
Yeah.
What's the difference between, I'm sorry, I'm
it's
ignorant.
It's basically a drag queen.
That's awesome.
It was. I was raised by a drag queen. I was ahead of the curve on that one.
I can relate to you in that when my mom and dad divorced, my mom, I was seven, my mom moved me to Atlanta into the predominantly gay community.
Yeah.
So all of my neighbors were gay men couples.
Ah,
and
there
then
you
it
go.
Was in 1977.
Wow.
So that's the, but not, and, not transvestite. But
I bet that was a great neighborhood.
But
gay
not
guys
typical.
Can clean up a neighborhood like you wouldn't believe.
It was very safe.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. So now let me ask you this, because I didn't, this is how that affected me. I thought gay was just regular.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand that in the world, gay was a problem.
Yeah.
Because as my neighbors, they were just my neighbors who happened to be a couple who happened to both be men.
Right.
And there were multiple male couples in my neighborhood. So then once I grew up a little and understood this prejudice against gay people, I was very confused.
Yeah.
And I think it gave me some tolerance is a bad word. Gave me like just a base level of not even acceptance. Like, that's just the way the world works. You just love who you love, and that's just how it works. Mm. Like interracial, even when people had problems with interracial couples in the South, my experience growing up with all these gay men, I think informed my opinion of that too, because in the Deep South I was surrounded by people who in the 70s and 80s were very much against interracial couples still.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't fucking get it.
I don't get it either.
Like, I don't get it. I don't know if it's because I had spent so much time in the gay community.
Yeah.
Or it's just who I was. But do you have any, does that connect any dots for you having a transvestite nanny?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you were a kid, so it just was what it was. You know, you weren't like, this is progressive. It was just like, well, there's Enos. That was his name. And
Enos is such a Southern name.
I know. Plus Enos, the penis, that's what everybody called him. But yeah, he wore a wig, a big black guy with a wig and high heels, and he taught me how to drive a stick, how to shave. He was like a tough dude, but he was a drag queen at night. He was burlesque.
Amazing.
Yeah, he was a great guy. Crazy story. So, you know, I lived in this rough neighborhood. I've told this before, but I got my bike stolen. These kids fucked with me, and they were like older. I was 12, and they pushed me off my bike. They took my bike. I ran home crying. And then Enos was like, what's going on? I go, oh, these kids took my bike. They were scary, whatever. And he goes, we're going to get it. And I was like, I don't want to deal with it. I just don't want to face these kids. I'm too scared. And he's like, we're getting the bike. So he took my dad's van. We had a big panel van with a big sliding door. And he goes, get in. And I was so scared. I was like hiding in the passenger seat. Like, oh, I don't want them to see me. They're going to beat me up again. And we drove around the neighborhood. We find these kids on a stoop taking my bike apart because they have to take the parts off so it doesn't look like mine or whatever they mm-hmm. do. And he goes, all right, you stay here. I'm going to go talk to him. And I was like, oh, don't go. I can't. You know, I'm freaking out. And he just walks up to these kids with high heels on and a wig and some kind of makeup. And imagine like Ving Rhames in a wig.
Right.
You know? And these kids are going nuts. It's the 90s. They're like, ah, look at this motherfucker, you know, this faggot, this faggot, you know, going crazy. And there's like six of them. And they're all just howling, laughing at this guy. And he goes, that's not your bike. And they go, what are you going to do about it? And they're holding tools. I got a ratchet, a wrench. And he's like, I'm going to take it. And I was like at the window, like a little kid, like, oh my God, this is crazy. They're going to beat the shit out of this guy. And he put his hand on the bike in the middle of it, and none of them did anything. And he pulled it, and they all just stood there, and he put it over his shoulder, and he walked back to the van, slid the door open, threw the bike in, closed the door, and we drove off.
Oh, my God.
It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
That's
it was
amazing.
A guy in a wig. It was too many things going on at once. It was like a overload.
It's like a rodeo clown.
Yeah,
showed
yeah.
up. It was like, I'm taking the bike.
Taking the bike, and he took it, and they didn't do a goddamn thing about it.
Wow.
It was incredible, and I never rode the bike again, but it was a good lesson.
Well, where is Enos now?
Well, he was killed in a...
What?
He went to Houma, Louisiana. My dad eventually gave him the van, and so he would drive around doing these shows, ended up hooking up with a guy in the van, and the guy thought he was a woman. I guess the guy was like such a drunk hillbilly, whatever. And the dick came out and the guy flipped and he shot him.
Oh no.
So yeah, he got killed in a hookup.
That's terrible.
Terrible story, but a hell of a guy.
That's terrible. We'll miss him. Oh, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was I think I was in college when it went down.
Were you just devastated?
Yeah, the whole family was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Crazy story. No one saw it coming. And he had moved on, for a few years by then. So it was like, oh, wow. It brought it all back. Yeah. It was a bummer.
Oh, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, well. That stinks. The mean streets of Louisiana.
That's so shitty.
Very shitty.
Man, oh, man.
But I've pitched this show 900 times, and everybody's like, oh, it's a little dark. I don't know. And I'm like, all right, fuck it. I'll just keep doing stand-up.
Well, you got a film degree. Just make it yourself.
I think that's the move.
I think that is the move.
These industry, they're all cowards. They're scared to try. They make another Marvel movie or a horror film. But, like, this is a great idea, but they won't touch it.
So interesting having just the teeniest bit of experience in traditional Hollywood. I mean the teeniest. I make no mistake. I know very little. But from what I have observed just from being in the backseat of Bert's ride,
You're in the passenger seat. Enough with the back.
I'm a backseat for a lot of it, and I'm fine to be there.
Okay.
But I find that true creative people are really rare. And most creative people that I've observed are in the world of stand-up comedy.
Oh, really?
Yes, because you guys write, direct, edit,
perform
everything.
Yeah, good point.
So the level of creativity in that world, and it shocks me how little traditional Hollywood these days draws from that world and trusts that world.
Yes.
Because I know with The Machine, they trusted Bert so much on that script.
Yeah.
And we thought that is what should be happening.
Of course.
The original voices in Hollywood are stand-ups.
Yeah, let the talent do their thing. It's like the only reason Curb Your Enthusiasm is still on the air. It's because it's just Larry David being Larry David. If some guy came in there like, I don't know, he's not very likable, we should change, like that, now the whole thing's ruined.
Uh-huh.
They always have this committee come in and give notes, and you're like, you hired me. Let me be me.
Absolutely.
And they're all nervous about losing their jobs. But I feel like, and look, maybe I'm just dreaming, but maybe in the 90s, a guy would have a vision, or a gal would be like, this guy's got something or she's got it. Mm-hmm. And they would champion this comedian or this singer. And now it's too risky.
I agree with you. I think, and it's a different paradigm. It's a different model entirely today, especially with films. And there's so many streaming avenues. There's so many different ways to put something out there, whereas even in the 90s there weren't
as many
as there are now. And it just makes everything kind of diluted.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And hard to get something original made, I think, for most people.
Totally. Even like Fully Loaded, there's comics on there who aren't doing great big things, TV, movies, but Bert or whoever is like, this is a funny lady or this is a funny guy, and he's doing more casting than these so-called producers.
I agree.
But you have to kill it for 10 years. They have to hear about you from 18 different people. It has to be a very safe choice.
Mm-hmm.
But take a risk. Like, you ever heard of New Faces?
Mm-hmm.
JFL, Just for Laughs. New Faces was like new faces. These people have something. Now, to get new faces, you have to have 8 TV deals, a movie thing, and a million followers on Instagram. So they're just pussies. They're shallow with the pussy.
They are shallow with the pussy. And part of what we always wanted to do with Fully Loaded was to give Bert's audience or the audience for Fully Loaded an opportunity to find somebody they might not find, because sometimes comics are harder to find.
Yeah.
If they're not passing through your city.
Or
they have no reason to be passing through your city, then that was part of what we hoped people would come away from the festival with, was that seeing somebody they maybe didn't know and can now seek that person out. Because stand-up comics, you guys are just so inspiring. We just finished Shane's special, and I've watched it. I think I've probably watched it 10 times now.
Oh, Torres.
Shane Torres.
Yeah, he's great.
And I just every time go, this guy is so original and funny, and I love his brain. And I watch yours and I go, I love his brain.
Oh, thanks.
I love the way that you present all of these points of view about things that are just so funny and dark and humorous. and make you think.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, you force somebody to go, well, that's ridiculous. But hey, wait a minute. I think I actually do that. You know what I mean? And then you go, well, maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. That's what comedy does if you allow it to.
Wow, so nice, because I think of comics as degenerate, insecure, depressed, weirdos.
Well, maybe, but
I mean,
really,
I like yours better.
To me, they're just the most free people.
Right, right.
So, and some of that freedom, I think, is hard in the regular world.
Mm-hmm.
So they become depressed and degenerate and neurotic and OCD and anxiety. And because you just see the world through a different filter, and that is a gift to humanity. However, it is. I swear to God, how I feel. It's a gift
so
to humanity.
I feel like we get yelled at a lot, so it's funny to hear the other side. It's refreshing.
The people who yell at you, to me, aren't interested in like maximizing their own growth potential. Because if you can watch a comic and let it affect you, and really reflect on, and this sounds too deep, like now you're in a self-help like seminar to go to a comedy show.
No, keep going,
that's
sister.
Not what I mean. What I mean is when you hear a joke that you think is hysterical and you laugh at it, but if you analyze that joke, it's like inappropriate or not PC.
Of course.
Then it allows you to kind of free your mind in a certain way.
Right.
And to also reflect on yourself and go, well, where am I being an asshole?
Ooh.
Because what he said is funny. But really what he's talking about, if someone really acts like that, then they're an asshole.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And look, some comics are just going out there and they want to say the N-word, but they're not getting laughs anyway.
Exactly, because that's not funny. That's not funny. That's mean.
That's mean. It's not funny. There's no twist. There's no turn. There's no clever. But inappropriate, I mean, it's funny how like the most liberal people now have become so conservative. It's gone full circle. Like
crazy,
I'm in Brooklyn and I'm doing a joke and they're clenching their pearls.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, you have blue hair and a nose ring. When did you become Reagan's wife? You know, it's like Nancy Reagan out here.
Right.
And they're mad about words. And I'm like, you're like the people who stepped on the rap CDs or rap tapes in the 90s, you know, or Elvis was dancing and they're like, oh, this is inappropriate.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so weird. They don't even realize it, but they think they're doing the Lord's work and saving the world. But it's you're just bumming everybody out.
Well, I think the Lord's work is realizing that we are privileged to live in a country where you can say whatever the fuck you want without threatening like terrorist attack or whatever. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can have your jokes. You can have your entire set. And we have a place where we can be free to have that.
Yeah.
And to process it how we desire instead of trying to shut somebody up, because that's what our country was built on, was freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And you should be able to say that shit and it be funny and that be okay that it's funny and not judge somebody for laughing at something that's clutch your pearls.
Right.
Oh my God.
And they're so allowed to hate it. That's their free speech.
100%.
But my thing is when you call me a homophobe or whatever, at least I was joking. You're serious.
Exactly.
You know? I'm like, so who's the mean one here?
It's like your joke where she said you look like a serial killer and you said she looked easy.
You look easy. And she's like, what the hell? I'm like, you called me a murderer.
Right?
And you look like a fun lady.
But see, that's something that you go, oh, now I should think about how I think about women. Right? If I think about her, she looks like a slut. Well, that's possible. But if I, as a woman, think of he looks like a serial killer, that's just as bad.
Yeah.
It's just as bad.
Or way worse. Because also, I'm there. I'm like, hey, you look like a slut, but I chose you. I'm here.
I think comedy helps with all kinds of stuff like that. I love comedy. I'm glad that I married Bert and that we'll date for a few months and then I'll never marry and we'll just be friends forever. I'm so glad that thought process didn't work out for me, because I can't imagine my life not in comedy with Bert. And then now in the past few years, getting to know you and Shane Torres and Jesus Trejo and all these other great comics and Whitney. And, you know, I would never be in this world without Bert. I have my set of friends that are all wonderful, regular people who do regular stuff, which I would have found, but I never would have found comics.
Yeah.
'Cause I was never in that world.
Hell yeah.
Such a rich world of great creativity. It's really cool.
And you've seen Bert and been around long enough that comedy, it's booming right now.
It's huge.
I wonder what that is, because it's almost like kind of rock music kind of went away. And it feels like now comedy has jumped in and done those arenas and it's almost filled this like party rebel vibe that people are missing.
I think so. I don't know what is causing it, but it's really awesome.
It's awesome. And I hope it doesn't. I asked Bert, we were at the Gorge, and I was like, man, we are in a boom. Look at these, you know, thousands of screaming fans. It's Stavros walks out. Ah, you know, Santino. Ah, they're going. They all know everybody. And I'm like, this is incredible. I hope it doesn't go away. And he goes, it's not going away.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is anytime soon.
All right.
Everything ebbs and flows.
Sure.
Just like the stand-up comic driven comedies of the 90s that had their moment.
Yeah.
That moment was a long moment.
Right.
But it still was a moment.
True.
So at some point it might slow down a bit, but I don't think it's coming soon. It'll be for a while.
Well, let's get that money and that fan base while we can.
Exactly. And anybody who has not watched your special, Soup to Nuts, on Netflix should watch it because it is awesome.
Hear, hear, out of the whore's mouth.
I love it.
Horses.
Horse's
Sorry.
Mouth. One horse. Out of this horse's mouth.
There you go.
Who's not shallow with her pussy?
Yeah.
No, seriously. Such a good special. I'm happy for you.
Appreciate it. Well, now it's this bittersweet thing where it did pretty well. And now people are coming out to see me, and I need new material.
That's okay.
So I've got to write that.
Well, one thing I know about you is you are an excellent writer.
Oh, geez, come on. But it takes time.
It does. It'll be here before you know it.
All right. I appreciate the positivity.
Thank you for coming on my podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Because I know you're going on Bert's now, so thank you for coming to mine first.
This is great. Yeah.
Did you have fun?
This is great. Yeah, good talk, and I feel like I know you better.
Well, I feel like I know you better. And I said this all through Fully Loaded. I don't know if I ever said it to you. I feel like you're my little brother. I feel like I've known you so long that you're like my little brother. And it was so nice to talk to your parents.
Oh, that was weird.
It was weird?
Well, my parents are weird. You know, you just don't, worlds are colliding, you know, parents.
That would be weird.
Comedy coming together. It was a lot to process. It was like a drag queen stealing a bike back, you know?
Well, your parents love you very, very much.
Oh, yeah.
That was obvious. And they're really proud of you.
Good parents.
And that was obvious. And
that
they really
nice.
Like May. And that was obvious.
And you guys really were so nice to them, which I appreciated.
Oh, of course. Of course.
I don't want to meet anybody's parents, you know?
But I am still waiting on my cookbook from your mom.
Oh, shit. I'll crack the whip. I'll get on that.
I'm just kidding. Anyway, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This was a pleasure and a delight. Comedy.